Throughout all of history, they've only talked about the fame, never the hard work, never the elbow grease, never the early call time.
Hey, early call time.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Welcome to the podcast. This is Nadav. I'm here with JJ and Andrew, and also our special guest, Ben Kasu.
Good afternoon.
And Ben is a jack of all trades. I met him while working on Epic Mealtime during their Epic Chef debacle. And he does a whole bunch of stuff. He edits. He's a first AD. He's a post supervisor, camera guy, sound guy, post PA, writer.
Okay. Crafty.
Okay.
Crafty.
Okay.
Crafty.
Okay.
I'm okay. A great crafty, actually.
You say you're a jack of all trades, but what would you say that you are overall? Like, are you an entrepreneur? Because
I've been called that recently, and I don't know. I wouldn't label myself like that, but I do like enterprises.
Okay. All right. What do you like to do the most? That way we can put a label on you.
Yeah. When someone asks you what you do,
we want to label you.
I like to have fun, whatever I'm doing. Made a goal that
that's unemployment, though, right?
Whenever I had a job, I was always trying to make it fun, in one way or another. Even if it was, you know, running around emptying the garbages on a music video, I always thought something was cool in doing it, and so that was sort of my goal. So I always took a job if it was fun, and that was that.
Cool.
Right on.
Employed Ben Kasu.
Yeah.
All right. Perfect.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Okay. So why don't you run us through? Like, how did you get started? Where did you go to school? Did it start in school?
I grew up in France, where we had a lot of plays in theater. So I did that, and I did lighting and was on stage. And
you did acting too.
One year there was some auditions for an American movie that was shooting in Paris. It was a James Ivory movie called A Soldier's Daughter Never Cries. And
did you audition for the daughter?
I auditioned for another part.
The soldier's daughter.
I'm the one. I was supposed to be this, young kid who was supposed to seduce the young version of the daughter and show her my penis and try to get her to touch me and shit. And she freaks out in a little cabin.
Oh, you're
and
perfect turned, for that.
This sounds amazing.
I think I would have. I mean, I would have been probably miscast. I'm not that kind of guy. So
really.
But
sounds like the casting director nailed it.
I know the guy who did get the part is a friend. And I went through that whole process of auditioning and, didn't get the part, but, you know, it was still fun. And I got to do background on set for, you know, a couple weeks and did a bunch of different, you know, background scenes and got to see the whole inner makings of a pretty cool director and a pretty decent sized movie. And it was, you know, from there on, I did a program and Boston called iTrip.
Okay.
It was, you know, Institute of Television, Radio, and Film Production. It was like one of those 6-week programs.
Mm-hmm. Out in?
It was in Boston.
Okay.
Out of Boston University.
So you flew to Boston to take this
program? Yeah, one summer I did that in Boston and loved it and never thought again. Went to Boston University for school, actually, where I graduated. With a master's of something or no some degree a
master's in something or other.
I got bachelor's actually. I don't even want to lie about that. So I'm a doctor.
I'm like a doctor or something like that.
PhD in 2 years in film, which was somewhat. It was very good education for me to be in film school, but it's definitely not where I feel like I started learning film once I got back on set after school. So I did school for 3 years and I had a lot of theory and I met 2-3 great professors, you know, who really taught me how to think about filmmaking. And one of them was, you know, you won't be a good filmmaker unless you try every single position out at some point. And my dad had said something like this. My dad's an architect, and he said something when I was young. He said, "Well, if you want to do film, you should, you know, it's like being an architect." You need to know the different jobs. You know how you need to know how to be a mason. You need to know how to be whatever you do on a construction set. You can tell I didn't really follow my dad's footsteps.
Sure.
Right. So same thing in the film industry. I think that that makes sense. And I always did want to, you know, lead towards producing eventually. And that's sort of what I did and took on every single job and I could ever find. And
so how'd you get those jobs? Did you like network from like that first audition or did you just answer Craigslist ads?
That's my best advice is always, you know, keep people's numbers, you know, and stay in touch with people because you absolutely never know. I mean, whether it's some neighbor or the neighbor's friend who comes to visit and then all of a sudden you're in some business deal wheeling dealing with them. I mean, I've met people in all walks of life who somehow have gotten reconnected back to the film industry or to some job I got later on that wasn't involved in the film industry. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's, I don't know, you just keep your ears open and go out, meet people, meet more people.
So you're like
sifts through people.
So you're Mr. Freelance. That's you're just jumping from one project to another.
Yeah, I mean, I started a company I had a couple different companies now. You know, where we ran production or post production or different things. Like I worked at different jobs. You know, I worked at a trailer house for a long time called. Yeah. And
how was that?
That was fun. You know, I learned a lot about the post-production world.
How did you get into that house?
I think there was a post on a UCLA job board. My friend calls me up. He says, you should go check this out. I don't even think I really knew much about the trailer houses existed, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to go check out the job, and it was for a position as a runner. So I was like, I remember I came in, I was editing this video for, like, my buddy was like, you haven't been doing much this last few weeks, why don't you do this little video? And he showed me this this TV show called America's Next Producer. He's like, make a video for America's Next Producer. I'm like, okay, fine. So I made this video, and it's just this, it's a one shot of me running around this house and doing, you know, like 10 costume changes all in one take and being like, you know, for some reason, it makes me look like a psycho.
Okay.
But it's pretty funny.
Do you still have this footage?
Oh, I could show it to you. Absolutely.
Please.
At some point, I'll show you.
Okay.
And so I show this piece, which is pretty cool. And it's all these tricks because it's all one shot.
Mm-hmm.
It's
a sizzle.
It's no Birdman.
Right.
But it was fun. And so that guy looks at me, he's like, oh, you like to edit? And I'm like, yeah, it would be something fun to think about. But that's not really my goal. I'd like to be a producer and work in the, you know, make movies. And he's like, well, we don't make movies here. People who do trailers don't make movies. We do marketing, you know. And then I sort of got the scope of what marketing films was. And I thought, like, I fucking need to learn this. Because it's a really important part about the film industry, especially Hollywood, which is you make movies that can sell to an audience, and that's a business. And that's something I didn't know until then, and I don't think...
Right.
You lose a lot of the magic of the, oh, it's a really good story I really believed in, which, you know...
And that's actually that's something that you should, like, take into account before you even start coming up with an idea of what project you want to make. Because if you're making some weird abstract, unless you're like Darren Aronofsky or something that could like get away with that, it's, you know, those pitches are just going to be really hard to pitch if it's like, oh, we can't sell this to kids. This isn't like in this demographic. It's not in that demographic. We can't really pinpoint who would really want to watch an Albert Einstein biopic. No, I would want to see that.
Yeah.
I would definitely.
All right. Well, I can't come up with a weird pitch off the cuff, but...
The one time you can't.
That's a very. What I'm trying to say is, good on you for trying to understand that aspect. What could you shed any light on it?
About what specific aspect?
About what you learned. Like, have you seen movies that came in through the house? Or you're like, oh, this isn't going to do well, or this will do well, since you were like saw the marketing aspect of it.
Oh, as far as the trailer stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean the in the jargon, you polish a turd. That's like half the time what you're doing. There's actually a good story about one movie. I can't remember the name. You might need IMDb. It was a movie. It was some like thriller murder mystery thingy.
Okay.
That movie comes in. And everyone's just like, oh my god, this is a fucking train wreck of a movie. And, you know, it's at this train wreck phase. And so the whole thing just, it fits properly. So we're working on the movie and it wasn't going to be a good trailer. But what did happen is that one weekend, that movie somehow played at a Hollywood Hills party.
Okay.
It's like big screen. People were just laughing the shit out of it. Like, check out this train wreck movie, blah, blah, blah. And it got back to our company because had a tag on it. And someone from the studio was at the party from Sony, I think it was. And so someone calls us at and like they're yelling on the phone. And it's, you know, Monday morning and it's, you know, not even 9:30. And everyone in the office, which is almost 40 people, is in the boss's office, like crammed in there. And somehow I get the super comfy seat, like the $5,000, you know,
lazy boy.
And I'm just there in the lazy boy. They're just like, what the fuck is this guy doing on the lazy boy? First of all,
how did he get this chair?
He's a runner. Early on, he was a runner still. And the guy looks at me first. He just, like, goes at me. He does the whole speed. You know what fucking happens? We lose business. This is fucking terrible for everyone. You don't understand the repercussion. Did anyone take this movie out? Blah, blah. Who showed? He's, like, basically doing the whole thing at me. Uh-huh. And I'm like, oh, my God. And he's really gangster. He's got, like, a picture of, like, mobsters behind his desk, literally. They're always looking at him. Like, shit.
So it wasn't you.
He looks at me.
I was gonna say it was your fault, though, right?
He looks at me. No comment. He looks at me and he says, "So did you do it, Ben?" And I was like, "I don't know anyone who lives in the Hollywood Hills." That was all I could think of saying. And he's like, "You're right. You're nothing but a schmuck." I said, "Yeah, that's right. That's right. I'm a schmuck. That works." And no, I didn't. I didn't bring that movie to a Hollywood Hills party. But someone did, and it was bad news, and, you know, or whoever the studio was really annoyed. And everyone was, you know, really on their toes at our office after that because we thought that, you know, we might lose the business or something like that.
Right.
But the movie came out. It was a train wreck no matter what. It wasn't going to make a difference. So.
Right. Nothing that a private Hollywood Hill screening could have made
you know,
break.
We cut for like a few months on that movie, and I don't think anyone ever cracked anything that was, you know. Genius. And that's the thing is right. that when you do come up with a great thing, and sometimes in a teaser trailer world, is that even if it's the best teaser trailer that'll ever come out, it'll never get seen because it's too innovative. Or there's one exec or one somebody who's going to put their foot on it. So what happens is that it becomes a cookie cutter thing. So, you know, I just talked to someone who is a freelance producer in the trailer industry. He used to work for and he left. And was working on some other movie and heard back from, you know, through the studios that there was a fight, you know, within whatever house.
Mm-hmm.
And they just took the movie away and they gave the same trailer to some other studio. And they're like, basically recut the trailer as is, give or take, and made a couple different changes. And the other trailer got the finish, which is a big deal. You get more money. You get all these other things that come with it. And you get to say you finished on that movie. And it was a big movie. You know, no names and shit. But, you know, it's a pretty cutthroat business. And it's all about marketing. And that was a really good lesson for me. And I spent about 4 years working the trailer industry. And when I, you know, resounded to me that I would definitely never do anything else besides marketing because the money gets really good eventually, and then it's hard. It's hard to leave a comfy job, but I did.
Sure.
And I actually just left at that point. I left America, and I traveled for a year and a half. And during those travels, I ended up line producing an American movie that was shooting in Paris, and it was a small little indie movie. It was called
Okay.
And it was the guy who the director of Kissing Jessica Stein was producing his this indie movie and needed someone to produce it in France. So I was there and somehow got hooked up.
Perfect.
Through him. And, you know, it was like a not even a 10-day shoot or something like that. And did that and was living off in Brazil for a while and ended up working on some script there. And then I got a phone call from this guy in Chicago who had just started this company who wanted me to be part of this movie that he had come up with. It was called And so flew back to Chicago, worked with Second City.
Oh, cool.
And Improv Olympic students sort of developed the whole scheme for the movie. Worked on it for about 9 months. Really thought something was going to get there. We were almost done with the screenplay. Got into a huge fight with this guy who had brought me in. And the whole project sort of just plummeted.
Oh, no.
It was very... Very disappointing, but that's also, you know, a really good lesson. It's happened more than once now. It's the thing that happens in the film industry often is projects that are really good that you believe in never get made or get made 15 years later. I mean, I'd be disappointed if I never got to make that movie. And I actually, we're getting to the point where we're going to call lawyers up and be like, well, who owns what?
Mm-hmm.
And
who owns what scenes?
Well, I'd rather if we end up in that situation. Well, no, it's not even scenes. It was like certain ideas and concepts. Because it was a... Well, I don't even want to talk about the details. But the point is, it got to the point where it would have gotten really ugly. And I was like, well, we're good friends. Let's not lose that. Let's forget this movie. And so that's what happened. And now we work on some other stuff that has nothing to do with the film industry. And we talked about it recently. He said, you know, it'd be good to make that movie still. And I was like, yeah, you know, I'll try to get back on it at some point. We'll bring the right people again. And so, you know, maybe sometime, you know, after, you know, Water Under the Bridge, that movie will get, you know, put up into production or something. You know?
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed indeed.
Okay, so back to the Trailer House.
Sure.
What was it like? Like, what do you see about, because... Any trailer that I see now gives away the entire movie.
Okay, the more the film gives away, this is just a rule of thumb. It's not necessarily true, but the more the film gives away the movie, the less good the movie is.
Okay.
But that's not necessarily true. It's also catering to the lowest common denominator. It's like, well, honey, I don't know what this movie is about. You know, like there's so many people who go see a teaser and they just get the... I don't get it, you know?
Uh-huh.
And
so is that the trick? You need to see the teaser in order to not have anything spoiled?
Well, watch the teaser, watch trailer one. If you watch trailer two or three or anything of that, I mean, twos are usually already telling you the whole plot.
Okay.
But that's sort of the way you think about it. The first thing you release is very vague. It's just a concept. I mean, we just saw the new Star Wars trailer. I mean, there's nothing to it. There's like... 25 shots in that trailer, but it gives you a real cool sentiment of what's coming up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The next one will reveal a lot more, and trailer two, which will probably come, you know, in September of next year or something like that, will probably really reveal a lot of the plot line. You know, who knows though? It's J.J. Abrams, so
right,
he might, you know, avoid that.
Maybe we'll peel back.
But most trailers, if you go look at all the trailers that get made for, because they do all the international trailers, I mean, they tell the story. And that's sort of what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to tell the story in minute and a half, 2.5 minutes, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you always write the concept or you structure the concept of a trailer in three acts the same way you do a movie.
Now, Ben, I have this theory I've talked about with... a number of people, and it's about how many times a trailer is seen in a certain amount of period. Let's say in a month a trailer has been seen 1500 times and it's a shit movie, and then let's say a really great movie has been only viewed maybe 100 times. I guess what I'm asking is, do you see a trend for crappy movies being saturated into the market for marketing?
Well, I mean, first of all, there's...
Just so they can get, like, the first box off.
There's more money to put... The question is, where was that trailer seen and by whom? Mm-hmm. You know, was it seen in a movie theater in front of another movie that's usually very targeted demographics, you know?
Right.
Or was it seen by someone who was surfing online who had to see it because it was an advertisement block?
Okay.
Was it someone who went voluntarily to look for that movie and to go see it and didn't need, you know, external marketing necessarily to know about the movie?
Right.
Was interested because, you know, it's because,
so like Wes Anderson movies will be less saturated because there's already a built-in.
I mean, it's hard to say.
You know, I see there's a lot more variables now than before. That's like, you know, like in the 80s, you'd see it either in the theater or you'd see it on TV. Yeah, like there really wasn't anywhere else.
And basically, you'd see it in front of a movie. That was pretty much it. You know, yeah. I mean, there's some countries where I don't think they do TV ads the way we do for movies. I mean, I don't even think in France I see much advertisement for film.
Yeah.
You know, on television.
Well, a lot of other countries just do commercials different altogether. Like in Israel, they just have all the commercials like at the end or like at the beginning, and then it's just uninterrupted broadcast.
So you do like 8 minutes of commercial and then the show?
Not 8 minutes of commercial, but it's like there's just no commercials. Like, it's like it doesn't interrupt the broadcast. Like they just figure out some other way to do it.
Wow.
At least that's what it was like last time I was there.
I have to say, I like Israeli commercials. I've watched them avidly. There's one with a little cheese guy, I think. I don't know if you've seen it.
I've seen a cheese with a panda where a panda just like beats the shit out of everybody and like intimidates people into buying its cheese.
That's amazing.
It's amazing.
It's one of the funniest commercials ever.
It's been an ongoing series too of commercials. It is one of the most clever commercials. It's just this panda who comes up to people and is like, I can eat my cheese.
Yeah. Like it's like a dad and a son. They're like arguing about which cheese brand to get. And the son wants to get the one with the panda on it. And the dad's like, nah, we don't need it. And then all of a sudden, just wide angle, and you see a panda just looking straight at them. And they're like, And then he just, like, picks up the cart and just starts rustling it and, like, like knocking it over. And he's like, all right, we'll get the cheese. It's great.
Interesting.
All right. And the cheese.
I'll have to see it.
Okay. So, Trailer House. After the Trailer House, what'd you do after that?
This is what I was saying. I kind of vagabonded for a while.
For a year and a half.
Right, you traveled.
And, you know, had that project that didn't do so well.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came back to Los Angeles, and I've been cutting a bunch of different things and doing posts since.
Are those all from the networks that you made at the Trailer House, or how did you, like, become an editor of features?
Well, I've only cut one feature at this point. I've worked on a couple other features, you know, as an assistant and worked on stuff. And this one sort of came out of nowhere. I cut a short in May of, you know, last year. And it was for this director. And he was doing a feature later that summer and got a call a few months later saying, hey, you want to cut this movie? I'm like, yeah, sure.
Sweet.
That was that. I haven't actively looked for another feature.
Mm-hmm.
I've debated whether to go into any of the guilds that I'm now eligible for and have yet to. And I have actually been focused on something else recently. So I've been sort of out of the film industry. I just moved back to Los Angeles, you know, 10 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Huh. Welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah, it's good to be back. I just moved down to the South Bay. It's quite nice out there. And, yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to get back. I took some meetings, you know, with some different producers and different people and just sort of getting back into the mix.
Nice.
I'm looking forward to, you know, getting more of my film head on because, as I said, I was distracted by some other projects, but I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's kind of fun. It actually gives you a lot more perspective on the film industry because you're like, oh, it's not all about, you know, because sometimes you work on these jobs, like you feel like you're at NASA, like your people are like, you ain't get the fuck out done right now, like it's crazy, like, yeah, like, it's okay. Like, you can see, you have more perspective on the craziness, I think, of the film industry, which I don't think you see so much in other film, you know, like, you spend so much money on a film set in a given period of time, there's so much stress that's built up. That you have to get things done at incredible speeds, and that creates a lot of tension. I don't see that necessarily the case in most other industries. The event industries is very stressful, though, which can be, but you know, comparable in certain sense.
Yeah, it's not comparable to like accounting. Like,
or scientists trying to cure cancer, and they're like, well, we can always do this tomorrow.
Right.
But here, they're like, no, we're going to stay here until it's done.
Yeah, yeah. The script is not finished.
And we're going to scream at everyone about it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't know if you've listened to any of the podcasts in the previous couple of weeks that it's been around. If you haven't, it's totally okay. But
God, don't put them on the spot.
Jim. No, I haven't listened to it, if that helps.
No, it's okay. But we try to be entertaining. We also try to be educational. So do you have any advice to anybody that's trying to get into the film industry in any facet, not just in editing or production, but just, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
writing, anything.
Well,
2 cents.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what angle you're looking at it. But I think in general, just, you know, you have to be a very motivated person, I think, to do well in the film industry. I think it's a transient business. You know, you ever see the Joel and Ethan Coen movie, Barton Fink, when he gets to the desk, he's like transient or resident. There's very little residence in this city and in film industry, because a lot of people come in and out. And, you know, if you're an actor, you have sometimes what's considered a shelf life.
Mm-hmm.
I've met actors who show up and I introduce them to a friend who's an agent or a manager. And, you know, he's 26. What, he's 26? He's kind of getting old. I'm like, what the fuck? He's 26. He hasn't hit his prime yet. but it's because they want to hone them. They want to grow them from the 16-year-old and develop them. You know, you see more and more of that, of the superstars. So it's an industry that wants to be molded. So get in, if it's something you want to do, get in as early as possible.
Be younger.
Yeah.
You know, pretend to be younger.
Do yoga.
I don't know. It go where there's a film and just talk to people who are on that film set. I mean, if you're in a local in the middle of nowhere, it makes it harder, but then make it your goal to do that. And if you're just trying to write a movie and make one, then, I mean, just pick up a camera and do that. Because now there is no stopping anyone. I mean, there's no more excuses for not making a movie, I don't think.
Yeah, you could shoot a movie on an iPhone. I think one of JJ's friends actually did that, didn't he?
He did a music video with an iPhone recently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, it looks good.
Yeah.
You know, the revolution of, you know, digital imaging has brought that to the film industry, is that you have a lot larger range of material.
Yeah.
And it makes it as an audience member, sometimes frustrating to sift through, but it's also very exciting, because I'll watch movies that I'll find on YouTube that some user posted that will never make a dollar, or, you know, I won't even necessarily watch the whole movie. I'm just like, how the hell has this even been made, you know? And somebody just was dedicated enough to make this movie and spend time to make it, and that's awesome. And I don't, you know, not everything is going to be marketed trailers, you know, big movies, big actors, but that's the kind of fun part as an audience now, that you can get to sift through that. And as a filmmaker, you get to make shit movies now.
Yep.
At no cost. And people will or will not watch it, you know?
There's very little barrier to entry these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, just stay dedicated is my main thing, and talk to talk to people, be social. That usually got me into a lot of rooms. You know, barge into places if you have to.
Pretend like you've been there before.
Yeah.
And act like you belong there.
I have a great story. So the first time I went to the Cannes Film Festival, I somehow got in. Somehow got a pass. Pretended to be part of a production company that I wasn't of, and got the pass. And then somehow they were celebrating the Egyptian film. It was the year where the Egyptian Revolution and the, you know, the le printemps arabe. I don't know what you call it in English. The, you know, the Arab print, the some whatever, the spring of the revolution, the Arab revolutions, right?
So Arab spring,
yeah, something like that. I don't know.
Okay.
Anyhow, so they're celebrating all these movies and filmmakers from Egypt, and I somehow walk into this room where it's just champagne everywhere, and I'm like, oh, cool, champagne. and I realize that I am the only other white person in this room, except for this other guy who's really fancy and who's looks like he's the center of attention. And I'm like, oh, shit, that's Peter Fonda. And it's like me and Peter Fonda with a lot of Egyptians. And so next thing I know, I've like got just a couple of Egyptians talking to me. Oh, blah, blah, blah. We're on the patio. They invite me to their yacht the next day. But think, and then everyone goes out. I'm like, where's everyone going? We're going to the movie, obviously. Are you not coming with us? And I'm like, I don't have a ticket. You can't get in. And I'm like, oh, I have a phone call to make. I'll meet you guys there. And that was that. And then I met them. They're like, oh, it was a great movie. We didn't see you. And they're like, yeah, you didn't see me. I don't know. I was right there.
Like, what did you think of the tension between this character and that character?
Bullshit is my number one on that. I used to go to my film class and pass out in the front row. It was this guy called Ray Carney, who was John Cassavetes' biographer. And so he was like this super intense guy who'd wear a bow tie. He talked like this, and he's kind of crazy.
Okay.
And get really excited about filmmaking, though. That was cool. And stop the movie every 30 seconds. What was that? What was that? That was a footstep. Did you see that footstep? It was deliberate. Which was cool, though, because you realize that everything's deliberate in filmmaking if it's done well.
Mm-hmm.
And the accidents are usually, you know, some sort of miracle.
Yeah.
But all that to say is that I was in the front row and I'd pass out systematically day or night, whenever the class was, and I'd fall asleep. But I was pretty good about watching movies in general. So I, you know, had seen the movie at least once. Mm-hmm. And then would, you know, be in a discussion and want to jump in and start bullshitting some discussion theory. And he would just, shut up, you didn't watch the movie. And then every so often he'd let me talk and be like, all right, that's fine. The thing is with film criticism and film theory and when you talk about anything is that you can always come up with a good argumentation even though it's bullshit. You know, that's like the essence of politics right there.
Fair enough.
Yeah, as long as you're a demagogue and you can talk without stopping, people will listen. Usually.
Just mention mise-en-scène and everybody's like, ah, oh, yeah.
Mise-en-scène, that's one of my favorite film terms.
Yep. He saw it.
All right, so now we're going to do a segment that I've grown to love. It's a new one that we're doing. It's called Horror Stories.
Oh.
You haven't heard this, JJ.
No, I haven't.
Oh, you like
and,
this.
And this is the intro to it.
That is without a doubt the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Are you crazy? Or just plain stupid?
The f*** are you doing?
Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
So this is a segment where...
I love the play with the pan, by the way. That was nice. I like that.
That was actually accidental phasing. A miracle, as Ben just described it.
Yeah.
So this is a segment where you describe just the biggest fuck-ups that either you've seen happen right in front of you, that you were a part of. You don't have to say any names. You don't have to say what production it was, what show it was. But just what are some just gigantic screw-ups where you're like, oh my God. Go.
Should have talked to him prior to the show.
I'm going to go on record and say I've never been part of a fuck-up personally.
Smart. Very smart.
Good start.
You know this guy.
A friend of a friend.
His name's Brendan, I think.
Brendan Masu.
You know, when you ask the question, there's like a flood of bad things that happened.
Yeah. I could tell. Your eyes widened.
Yeah, nothing ever catastrophic. I don't think I've ever been part of
like a firing. Have you ever witnessed a firing?
Oh, I've been fired.
Do tell.
No, I think you mean your friend. What was his name? Brian.
Brian.
Brendan.
Brendan.
Ben.
Somebody got fired. I've been fired more than once. Yeah, it happens. You know. Either whether it's a disagreement or whether you actually fuck up. So to be specific, I was working on a film called and yeah, I mean, the production coordinator and I were not getting along. And the minute she had a reason to fire me, I was off that film set.
So, oh.
I mean, it was probably for the best.
That's too bad.
Yeah. No, it happened, so.
I'm sure you got over it. Yeah. You bounce back off your feet pretty good, Ben.
Boy, that segment kind of fell flat, didn't it?
Yeah, I was hoping for something juicier, but Ben got really sentimental.
Last week with the camera in the pool.
Yeah.
Trying to think of something really juicy for you guys.
You can make something up.
No, I mean that.
No one's going to fact check here.
No one's going to fact check me. Oh, but I don't know.
Well, I think you mentioned one earlier. I mean, the fact that you were in the hills and watching a movie about
Yeah, I was debating whether or not to cut you off and just start playing the intro music there, but you seem like you were on a roll.
I'm trying to think. Like Jim, there was this whole thing with Jim Carrey. Now, this one producer was from Fox at Jim Carrey's house, and we were cutting a new trailer for something like that. I don't know what okay. movie. Oh.
Okay.
And we needed to get this new trailer because the exec was at the house with Jim Carrey, and it was apparently getting very awkward. So he gets this like, you know, you need to get this trailer here, and they were still making changes at it, and you know, the boss is like in the machine room, like rooting for the digi beta to like finish. You know, come on, and give a couple DVDs with it. And then he like turns around and he looks at the runner. And I remember because from my runner days, I had left a note written, drive fast, take chances, leave no traces. And I had that like as like a poster board for the runners. And, you know, he's like, that sign, you listen to that sign, you go through the red lights, I will pay for the tickets. And so this little runner, like, who's like, you know, 19, is like freaking out. And he, you know, storms out. And I'm like, you know, like, drive normally, you'll be fine, don't worry about it. He's like, should I really go through all the red lights? I'm like, no, don't go through all the red lights, don't do that. Drive safely and, you know, drive carefully, and that's that. But, yeah, that was a scary moment, you know, where all of a sudden, like, everything goes wrong. I mean, I've seen some execs throw things, you know, at people, you know.
Oh boy.
So I mean, that's kind of scary. It'll kick up. I got some more stories.
Okay, good.
I was on this film. It was a music video for Outkast, and this was one of my first bigger music videos that I was working on. And I was on set PA or something, and the first AD looks at me. It's like, I need you to go do something for me. And he wanted me to go drop off his director reel to an agent,
all right,
which is a personal.
Yeah.
And
that's not going to help the music video.
And the producer on it, or one of the coordinators, starts, you know, being like, where are you going? I'm like, I have a run to do for, you're supposed to be on set. Blah, 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 first told me to go do this. Oh, but you can't. I'm like, but I was told to. He's like, hang on a second. And then next thing you know, on the middle of the film set, Outkast was like, Outkast not too far away. Mm-hmm. There is just a screaming match between this little woman and this little dude who's the first AD. And they were just like, here are my balls. Here's my vagina. Let's fight. And it was just like, everyone was just like, stand back. And I wasn't too far away, like holding the thing. And last thing I know was like, just go. Just leave the set. They're talking to me now. I'm like, and she's like, don't go. And I'm like, what do I do? Who do I listen to? And then I kind of just like step aside, and they cooled it. I don't know. I can't remember exactly how it got cool. I think maybe some other producer came on and been like, what is this about? And then eventually she came up to me and said, okay, you can go drop it off. And Jesus. I was like, what is this? And then I looked. That's when I realized, what am I dropping off of so important? And it was like, oh, it's this guy's director's reel. I was like, that's so Hollywood.
God, that reminds me of I did this internship at a talent agency when I was in high school still. It was like some class that we had. And there was like an assistant to one of the like managers, and the manager was upset at her for taking a lunch break. Mm-hmm. And there's just this whole like the boss is gone and every other assistant is in there. Some of the other managers are in there talking about how much bullshit it is that she can't take a lunch break. Mm-hmm. And then they all look at me and they're like, what about you? Don't you think it's bullshit that she doesn't get a lunch break? Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, I guess. I'm just a fucking intern. Like, I'm here for 3 hours a day. Like,
have her lunch. Let them eat lunch.
Yeah, let her have her, you know, bologna sandwiches, whatever.
God, that just made me think of something. This was when the stakes were very, very low. I was a film student still.
Okay.
And I was making a short film, and I brought everybody out, all my cast, which was about 12 people, mm-hmm. out to the forest. And we were shooting out in the forest. And we were shooting on Super 16, so it was pretty cool, and I was excited. And we start filming a little bit, and I was looking for a location, because I'd done a location scout before. I was looking for this one place to go to, and I said, hey, guys, why don't you just wait right here? I'll be right back. And
like every scary movie.
6 hours later.
Oh, my God.
Blown my whole day, all of daylight. I had gotten lost in the woods.
Jesus Christ.
Now, I heard that the cast had the best day hanging out in the woods. Apparently, two of the females were just like half naked all day, just hanging out on set.
Of course they were.
Prancing around all these actresses.
That 10 minutes after you left, I'm sure.
I mean,
no one's like, hey, is he coming back? They're just like, let's get naked.
No, well, so this was, we had phones. We had phones, so.
No service. Yeah, but it's like,
no service.
You can't be like, yeah, just go to the tree that looks like the letter R.
Yeah. So I got lost so hard. I found a road once I got out of the forest and then had to find my way back to the car. And by then it was the end of the day. It was terrible.
Oh, man, that sucks.
That was a tough day. And still in film school, and now this is probably the scariest thing that's ever happened to me film-related.
Okay.
I was in Andover, Massachusetts, where they have the IRS building.
I like where this is going.
We were on a location scout, and we were scouting sand dunes on the coast of Massachusetts. And my friend takes me out. He says, I know this area. I need to premise this. I didn't have a car nor a driver's license at the time.
Okay.
So I borrowed this girl's car who I didn't know very well, who was a friend, who was a roommate with my friend.
Okay.
Oh, no.
So I borrow this girl's car.
Does she know that you're borrowing it?
I'm borrowing his car knowingly. I say, please, I'm doing this location scout. I need to use a car. I was like, okay, cool.
Okay.
So she lends out this car. My two friends and I, we go out. We're filming everything. We're having a good time. And we get lost. We get lost in Andover. And we bust a U-ey in front of the IRS building. No problem. We drive. We finally get to the beach to where we were going. You know, take some pictures. And we were smoking a joint.
Uh-oh.
And all of a sudden, my friend gets a phone call on his phone. And he passes me the phone. He says, it's for you.
What?
I say, what do you mean it's for me? He says, just talk to them. I'm like, talking to the door. I'm like, hello? Who is this? And he's like, this is the FBI. This is the IRS Gov, blah, blah, blah.
What?
Where are you right now? I'm like, are we speaking to Benjamin Kasu? I'm like, yes, this is me. And what had happened, I mean, I don't know how long we can make this, but basically what happened is that we filmed in front of the IRS where there was some cameras that caught us. And this was, you know, 6 months after 9/11.
Wow. Oh, shit.
Exactly. And so they think that they might have some terrorists who are trying to scope out the IRS building because they saw these kids filming in a camera, bust a U-ey, screech tires, and leave. And, you know, I'm like, no, I'm on a location scout. So I speak to all these people on the phone for 45 minutes who interrogate the shit out of me. I'm like, I'm a Boston University student. I'm on a location scout. I'm with my friend in the car. We got lost. That's it. There's nothing else to this story. And they're like, well, you need to come and get debriefed. So a couple days later, we go to the IRS building in Boston, which turns out was definitely not an IRS building. It was some like unmarked office in this random building. And we got interrogated separately, both for an hour. They asked to see the footage. They asked me everything about, you know.
Did you show it to them, or you're like, over my dead body? I need a warrant for that, sir.
All you want to do is cooperate in this situation. Are you a terrorist? No. Have you ever looked up how to do a bomb? Have you ever been part of any? I mean, like, that's the kind of questions.
It's maybe
like,
once.
Yeah, no.
They're supposed to answer back, does the Constitution mean anything to you, sir?
Yeah. Oh, man.
So that was a pretty intense little situation there. Now, to the situation could have been a lot worse is that the fact that I was driving illegally was huge.
But did they even mention
that? Wait, how did they know it was you?
I was waiting for that one.
Yeah. So this is what I'm trying to figure out.
This is what had to happen. So the cops in, or the whoever, the IRS, contacted the FBI, who then tracked down the license plate.
Right.
Who called the owner, who lives in New York, who then told them that their daughter was driving the car. And they're like, no, there was a man in the vehicle, and they gave her the daughter's number. The daughter gives the friend number, then the friend who's in the car gets the phone call, hands me the phone.
What a trail.
How long was it from the time you busted the Yui until you got the phone call?
That's a good question. It's been a long time. Maybe an hour and a half max.
That's impressive.
That is.
It was not a long time. We actually joked around. We were like, they probably spent a lot of money doing that. Yes, we're like, whoops. Taxpayers' money hard at work.
That's why you don't get lost. You always print out a map quest, Ben.
What's funny is that...
In 2001.
A few months ago... I got lost.
Jesus Christ, Ben. This is the third fucking lost story.
I was in Andover, and I ended up in front of the IRS building.
Again?
I was no filming. We were there.
Should they call you up and like, Ben, long time, no talk. How are you, friend?
Wow.
It was for another business. But what I did do is stop and take pictures to send to my other friends and be like, guess where I am?
And no phone call.
And they were just like, leave now. Just go.
Man.
What are you doing, Jesus Christ, Ben?
Tempting fate. That's what he's doing.
I mean, it was just funny that I ended up... Because I told my friend who I was on some business there. And we were talking about going to see where it was because we hadn't been there yet. And we just happened to drive in front of it. And I was like, oh my God, this is where it all happened.
I'm surprised you got here today.
How many more lost stories do you have that end horribly like that?
If you keep on going, we could be here all night, probably.
Okay, I guess that's a nice transition into our next game.
That ended up to be a wonderful segment, by the way.
Yeah, you got another one?
No, I'm good.
At first, I was like, of all the people, I thought Ben was going to have the best one. It started a little slow, but then we built up. We ramped up real nicely, Ben.
That was great.
I'm glad we stuck with it.
Next time we do the segment, we need to preface it to the person.
Yeah, before we give you more of a heads up next time.
Well, because also, let's be honest, I shifted because I was like, I'm going to say that one. I'm like, no, I don't want to talk about that.
Like, the statute isn't up on that one yet.
Yeah. Like, that one actually could come and bite me. Someone randomly heard this.
All right, so this is a perfect transition into our next segment.
These are some sound bites from the Dawes childhood.
Hold on to your butt.
These are some fucking sound bites.
Sound bites. Super cool sound bites.
This is a chopper!
From the Dobbs childhood. Get ready for some sound bites from the Dobbs childhood.
Like this.
So this is a game called Sound Bites from the Dobbs childhood. And, you know, I watch a lot of movies when I was a kid, and there are, like, little snippets of movies that are burned into my memory.
Get to the chopper!
Stuff like that. Yeah, very good. But today is a special edition. Today is the...
Wait, did you tell Jay... Did I win last week?
Oh, yeah. Andrew won last week.
Get the fuck out of here. Yeah,
we said the Shehecheyanu v'Kiyamanu, which is the prayer, the Jewish prayer for first times.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Well, I said it after the show for Andrew before I went to sleep.
How does that go?
Shehecheyanu v'Kiyamanu. All right, so this game...
No, finish.
No, that's all right. So this game is going to be... TV shows that I grew up with.
Nice.
So it's going to be good. The theme songs for them.
Oh, yes.
Andrew's going to fucking kill us. I know this.
I think Andrew's going to do really well on it. More than half of these are on the TGIF lineup.
Oh.
Yes. Perfect Strangers.
Can I just list them all right now?
Nope. Okay, so Ben, the way that this works is you get a point for getting it, and your buzzer is you just saying your name. So once you hear it start, the second you recognize it, say, Ben, you know... Guts or Legends
well,
of Hidden
Temple.
Well,
you have to call on him.
Yeah, you have to wait till I call on you. And that's the game.
So scholarly.
Scholarly.
We can't afford buzzers.
We're going to get buzzers someday.
Yeah.
Once we start a TV show.
Well, we need to get buzzers with lights.
We accept Bitcoin donations on earlycalltime.com, which is overstock.com friendly.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. I was just grabbing for buzzwords. I don't
to boost our SEO.
Okay, so and now I'm going to play the first bite. Oh, but the thing is that since these are all YouTube clips, How blind are you with those glasses off? Like, could you see anything if you take your glasses off?
Yeah.
You can see them?
I can see things.
Okay, so just look that way. Don't look towards my computer screen because it's going to be the YouTube video.
You wanted to blind me by taking my glasses? Absolutely. I can't see anything.
No, I don't believe you now. You've said too much.
Damn it.
You've admitted too much, Ben. Right, okay, so don't look at the computer screen. Take your glasses off and we can play this game now.
Yes.
All right, so this is the first bite.
You're going to do really well, Andrew.
I'm going to ruin
you. This is the first bite from my childhood, and I'll try and stop the video before they actually say the name of the show.
All right.
Here's the first one. Come on now.
Advertisement.
Andrew. Family Matters.
Ding, 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 ding.
Fucking
ding,
A, ding. Man.
Next.
That was so quick.
Congratulations.
That was so quick.
You found a category.
They were going over the lake to pan up to Chicago, by the way.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's good.
I had a really lonely childhood.
I'm going to do this series where I do a cappella versions of all of these theme intros.
Oh, that's
just
great.
The Glee version.
I've already done the one for Friends.
Ooh.
It's not good.
Oh, I've seen that.
Okay, here's here's the next one.
Andrew, are you afraid of the dark?
Holy shit. Ding, 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 ding. I thought this was going to be the hardest one.
Jesus Christ.
Oh my God, you guys don't stand a chance.
I come from France. Oh, my defense. I come from France. I mean, I knew that first one, but I was like, it was working my title back from La Famille S'amuse, which is the French title.
You know, you can actually go in with the French title if you want.
No, I mean,
that comes first.
I don't think that's the right title. Okay, let's go. I got
Famille Matters. Did I say that right?
This is on the idiot.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Rain Man, what's next?
Here's
52.
Here's the next one.
Lots of queens.
And it starts right now. In 3, 2, 1. Go.
JJ.
Andrew.
JJ.
Step by step.
Ding, 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 ding.
Holy shit. I wanted to sweep it so
bad. Wait, can we let it play?
Yeah. This is good.
You can go to a previous post.
We went to the house.
Yeah,
we
went to the house.
Great song right there. Look at that guitar right there.
Oh, Suzanne Summer.
Say my love, think I found some love. What's up, Code Man?
This is a very appropriate show, though.
This is wonderful.
Time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I grew up with the show.
Day by day.
I watched the dub version of this show a lot. It's funny sometimes watching now the shows at night, and because I like know their voices, like, you know, as French dubs, and I'm like, that sounds weird in English. I'm twisted.
You're like, no, it sounded weird in French.
Yeah.
And now I see that roller coaster every day when I leave work, or what's left of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. All right, Andrew, if you get this one, because you're kind of older than me, so if you watch this, that means that you were not in the correct age range to watch it.
And you like little kids.
Because I was a little too old to be watching this.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
All right, here it comes.
He's keeping it real. Your favorite little study buddy, he knows the drill. Daddy's still just a kid.
JJ. Is this the magic school bus?
Wrong.
No.
False.
I think that was all white kids.
Not this show. Probably giving too much away.
The magic school bus.
Because you always mention what that teacher
was. Miss Frizzle. Yeah. Get messy, make mistakes.
Oh, yeah.
Words to live by.
I have no idea.
Holy, wow, is Nadav going to get a
holy
point
shit.
Today?
Okay, does no one know that one?
Mm-mm.
All right. No. That is Smart Guy. Disney's Smart Guy.
Oh, with the Maori kid?
Here.
Tien Tamara's little brother.
Pretty gifted, whatever.
Wow. You're
here comes.
He's a smart guy. Smart guy. Smart guy. He's the smart guy.
Wow, they're clever.
Do, 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 do. Wow.
That's my favorite.
Oh,
Jeez.
Amazing.
What was the show about? So it's a
smart, it was about a smart guy?
It was about TJ Henderson, fine young gentleman. very smart guy. Very smart for his age. Like, he skipped like 5 grades. Mm-hmm. Went to high school. He's just a little kid in high.
Wait.
Little kid bus to high school.
Wait. Doogie Howser.
I was going to say, is he going to be a doctor? Mm-hmm.
Nope, he's not that ambitious yet. He doesn't know what he wants to do. Let's go with computers and stuff.
He's a little too young for Doogie.
Yeah.
There was an episode where he took 2 girls to the prom. It was great.
and he wrote in his diary in WordPerfect.
Anyway. Mm-hmm. And all of his siblings were really stupid. So it's like, what? Who did your mother cheat with?
So it's
2, 1, and 1.
All right.
Here's the last one.
All right.
This is going to be the tiebreaker. No, it's not.
No.
Okay. It could be the tiebreaker.
Andrew's still a winner right now.
Tie maker. Here it is. Here's the last one.
Andrew Fullhouse.
Damn it.
Congratulations.
You got that on the opening drum roll.
Jesus. I know what you do.
Can we let it play, guys?
Everywhere you go. Everywhere you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jesse and the Rivers.
You know, eventually it's going to turn into sound bites from Dodd's childhood of commercials. So it'll be all those.
Oh, that's awesome, though.
It's funny you say that. I was very close to doing that.
See, that would be pretty fun.
Like, really, like, commercials that are like the Budweiser commercials, stuff like right. that.
Bud. Hey, Bud.
All right, guys, here's a. Remember how I told you that I did an a cappella version of a Friends?
Uh-huh.
I'm listening.
Here it is. Oh, advertisement.
Wait, when you said my you Spark did, business what does card, that
you guys
mean?
Get free employee cards, so you're picking up dinner.
Looks deal. Like you're getting money now.
Here we go. There it is.
Friends.
Oh, pretty God, good. That was beautiful.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do a whole series like that.
It's pretty true to life, to what it really was.
I mean, it's like, those are all the words I remember, and so I think that's the words everyone remembers,
thank
right?
Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
That was impressive.
I do what I can.
Oh, God.
Do you guys like that?
I did.
Like is not a strong enough word.
Wonderful. Okay, you know, maybe I'll make a blog entry out of it.
I like that.
A week.
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, Ben, thank you for being on the show today.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah. Thank you.
I'm sorry that you didn't know any of the TV shows, or maybe one of them. But
you and your French upbringing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird because next week we're doing all French TV show openings. It's the weirdest.
Crazy.
So odd.
Mm. I feel bad.
We're going to talk with our scheduler. Oh, I think I booked you for this one, right? Wonderful. And I make the games, so it's just it's really all on me.
That's true.
Better luck next time, Nadav.
Yeah.
Ben, thank you for coming. If anyone wants to give you work and they want to hire you, is there any info you want to give them on how they can reach you, like benkasu.com or?
No.
Okay, good. So fuck off, everyone. We'll edit that little part out.
No, it's not what I meant.
You can contact the show, and we can get you in contact.
Yeah, if you want Ben's contact info, like his address and his social, maybe we'll give you his address.
If you're the IRS, you already know how to get a hold of him.
Yeah, maybe you don't want people
to contact
you.
Yeah, if you're the IRS, you could hit us up.
I've already changed my name twice since then.
Perfect.
Wonderful. Maybe they won't backtrack on some sort of program that they have and match up stories. So with that, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. And listen to our podcast every week, read our blogs every week, and listen to the outro. Thanks, guys.
And that's a wrap. Didn't get your fill at Craft Services and you want more? Check out earlycalltime.com for more podcasts and information pertaining to the ever-growing entertainment industry. And remember to tell your friends about us via Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.